why we do it. I felt like the time-based protocol was very standardized. Criterion-based, function-based, extra protocol gives more individualized information to the athlete. It gives us a chance to develop more communication with the healthcare team. Talk some more about how they're progressing, whether they move on, if they're rehab, or if they're not doing very well, or just not progressing as quickly as they need to. We can talk to them to make sure we're progressing at the right time. Here's a lot of evidence-based information to determine what kind of outcome measures we're going to use. So that if somebody would say, why can't I do this? Well, we had this outcome measure, but you're not doing very well, and it's got a lot of history and background. Determining efficacy, you're ready to go. So, using a lot of information, and more importantly, we're putting the patient on blast for us. It's going to be the patient who determines how fast they progress, rather than waiting for a piece of paper to say, okay, here you are, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, let's start jogging, running, and jumping. Right? If we're not taxing these outcome measures, we're not going to let them do those things for their safety and for their forward journey. So, moving along, first phase is going to be our acute ambulation phase. Right? This is the most important one. This is coming right off the chopping block. If you guys are impressed, but what we want to focus on primarily are getting that knee extension back in the quad turned on, making sure that they can move and get them up and moving as soon as possible to walk around. So, what we're going to talk about are kind of the key components, things that we want them to address. So, this is our viewpoint, our treatment basis, our procedures that we do. There's obviously some pillars that you guys have thrown there, but this is kind of broken down into what we feel like is the most important aspects of the protocol. So this isn't by all means the entire protocol. This is just what we kind of feel like is important. So if we can see it up here, quad activation in with the knee and heel extension, making sure that we're getting the kneecap to move. I don't need to go through those. More or less, you guys have a lot of this information in the notes, so I'm going to have to skip through some of all these long slides, so feel free to read through the slides. Follow me, chase me down, I'll be here. But more or less, first phase, you want to make sure that you follow the precautions, right? Doctors, if they haven't commented in here, they have some restrictions and precautions, so this first phase, as far as brain promotion goes, brain drain goes, we want to follow those precautions that the doctor tells us. So, why the extension? Why is it so important? That's the most important goal, goal number one. There's research that I've talked to you about as far as osteoarthritis and outcomes, but it's just, it shows the inability to get full extension back in the knee as a poor predictor for outcomes. And also, I kind of threw this up there, as a whole, trainers, therapists, we need to have a standardized way to document our range of motion. And I feel like that's kind of lost in some of this computer technology that we've gotten. They kind of give you a protocol, a standard way to do it, but making sure that we document hyperextension, just to extension, to flexion. So they need to see that you guys can see it there. So if somebody were to come in with 5 degrees of knee hyperextension, you would document that 5 to 0, and if they had 130 degrees of flexion, 130. So that way, if I treated somebody else from a different clinic, you guys had somebody come in from a pizza clinic, and we knew that during this phase, we needed to get their extension back. If we can write down the end, their range of motion, if they're losing, they've lost that. What motion that you guys need to gain, we're all understanding where they stand. So, basically, we all know what quad set and straight leg raises is, but unfortunately, sometimes we don't see it standardized amongst everything. So, back, tail back there.
Yep.
Start the video. This is a quad set, and a straight leg is performed correctly. Basically, you see the quad activate, lock the knee straight, picks it up, comes back down, the heel and the calf move at the same time, versus an incorrect quad straight leg raise. The videos will play. You don't see the quad contract, you don't see that knee get to a full extension, so you're relying on the ligament and a lot of pressure on the anterior knee. Right after surgery, this is not something that's going to be performed well. We know pain is an inhibitor. So really emphasizing getting that full motion and then getting that quad to activate and hold that knee in that straight position will improve that outcome. So for our first phase, right, the criteria for progression, you can think of this kind of like a checklist. Right? Well, we went over these, so I'm not going to go through them all again, but basically what we want to do is we want to see each of those criteria checked off. You can see kind of at the bottom with that good quad activation, quad raise, the straight leg raise test. you want to see how very good quants, quantitative libraries is about that project. So once they've completed all these and we got your document, we can move on. You guys heard and talked about, to the breakout, some of these grounds there, or testing some of the things that we can. Next, functional symmetry is the next phase. This is where we want our athletes, our patients to basically be a normal person. They can get off the chair, they can walk around, they can climb stairs. This is not an athletic type phase. We want us going to get them functional moving, but also make sure they have symmetry, strength-wise, and basic activities, and strength and range of motion. So you're going to focus primarily on getting their muscles to engage, improving mechanics for the daily activities, progressing the strength and symmetry with the functional activities. So that's kind of what I'm going to talk about. As you can see, kind of the things we want you all to address, making sure we're addressing this active joint mobility, soft tissue mobility, getting those functional transfers to be kind of your meat and potatoes of exercise, right? You're focusing on those lifts, those techniques to gain the strength that you need to then progress to the next level, next phase. So, the first thing we need to talk about when we talk about mobility, there's lots of areas of mobility that will definitely need to be addressed as you can continue into more advanced exercises. And this is just a list of areas that you need to address. Primarily, in the first question, I think about the kinetic chain coming up from the floor. If the one part's not moving correctly, the one above and below have to do too much, and then you can end up causing more issues. Knowing when to do static stretching versus dynamic stretching, there's a time and appropriate way to do those things. So for static stretching, typically during this phase, we have, hopefully the first phase we've achieved that 0 degrees of knee extension. But when you have somebody who has, you know, a little bit of knee hyperextension, a test that we can do is called the heel height difference measurement, where you basically put them in the bone and you have those knees relaxed, give them a few, you know, 30 seconds to a minute to kind of fall into the stretching. What you see is that there's a difference in heel height. The involved leg is typically a little bit higher. The uninvolved leg, if that uninvolved side has hyperextension, you know, somebody who scores really high on a Biden hypermobility scale, you may not want to try and achieve their full amount of knee hyperextension because it is, it potentially is stressful to the ground. But slowly during this phase, getting that symmetry back so when the patient stands up, they feel like both knees are locking out and they're straight as the other one, so they don't have that weird feeling when they're standing up doing their exercises. So that's one test that we'll want to make sure that we address. It's an outcome that we have on our checklist down the road that we'll make sure we get. So the first ankle mobility drill is just a closed kinetic chain dorsiflexion exercise. Something they can do right after, they can do right after they kind of warm up. More or less, you're trying to get that anterior tibia translation, which is important for them when they start doing their exercises, learn to squat. So you know, you've got calf stretches, but you can also use it as a way to compare right versus left. The dynamic hip mobility drill, so you get basically circles to the joint, every joint like circles. More or less, you're working on trunk control, getting in, kind of going to a unilateral stance, going through that just to kind of warm up those joints. And then we have a dynamic hamstring mobility drill, so more or less, run through a lengthened position, once again, exercising trunk control, and then let them get into a little more flexed position and then try to get their hamstrings loosened up. Once you get them moving and more comfortable, you can go through a full mobility flow where they basically have done their warm-ups and then they just kind of go through a whole bunch of different little positions and kind of get them released up or down. We're trying to get blood flow going to the muscles, trying to get the joints lubricated. Here you see them going through a hip flexor stretch, hamstring stretch. Real deep into hip flexion when you can start getting down a little lower to spot and start working on your circles there. And then you have thoracic rotation and then you can come up. Go into a lateral lunge to get that vector to work, but also get an adductor stretch to kind of loosen up all the time. It's getting shoulder flexion, thoracic extension. So think about a lot of overhead squats and push press. You want to make sure that you can get that overhead pressure without the lumbar spine to have to compensate. And then you go on to the other side, which you can't say really much. But more or less, just getting them moving their body prior to the exercise. And this is just a couple of variations of warm-up exercises they can do. I like to focus on the abductors to hit abductors prior to doing exercises. This is going into the strengthening phase where you need them to be stable. So as you saw with the X-band walk, this is a treadmill way to warm up. You can raise up the incline and get them warming up on the treadmill, especially if they can't do cardio. You have to do this in cycles. It's a good way to kind of get them to warm up. When you get on, you focus on hip abductor activation. They're doing a quick step close chain TKU. and then focusing on mechanics, need for positions, just like that. Good way to warm up. And then when you get into the exercises, typically during this phase, functional symmetry, they ideally need to be able to move the same way, uninvolved in front, uninvolved in back, and involved. So if your right leg is the involved side, doing a lunge, a split squat, a static lunge, the mechanics should be the same. So practicing those, the sit to stand, eventually transform into a squat, and a lunge, your score to stand, or your static squat, your split squat, and turn into a lunge, and then eventually step up to give you a lateral exercise. So getting them to perform these functional transfers, once again, kind of creates independence, but also will progress to exercise down the road. So good examples of these, the sit to stand with the scales. So what you don't know, and what the patients have a hard time deciding, is when they're doing their sit stands initially, they have a hard time knowing if they're putting equal weight on both sides. And these are just real basic backing scales. What I were doing is performing sit stands, and what you can see is that she had equal weight going on both sides. You can even progress it into having more like a 60-40-70-30 split, where you know they're putting that weight through that leg. Next one. And then this is a good example of trying to perform a lunge where the guy is just not trusting his involved side. His involved side is on the left leg. You see how he's putting all his weight back on the right side. He's not letting that anterior tibial transition occur, which doesn't move that call. And this one, now his left leg's in back, he doesn't want to put any pressure through it, so he's blowing that left side primarily. And so what you want to see is ideally, you will post to a 90-90 split between the two, where each leg is performing the same amount of weight. So get up some hand help assist going over here, more or less getting them to clean up their mechanics at least. Good. I mean, this is what Bob talked about. This is another example of functional movement screens overhead squat. You're looking for symmetry, looking for mechanics, looking for alignment, and then shoulder flexion rising, mobility comes into play here. Like that, it's like to activate the core. And you don't have to just focus on the core muscles whenever you're doing for exercises. Progressions involving leg lifts and whatnot really start to kick in the primary muscles in the lower extremity of the core muscles. So, of course, length of the limit, as you think about the involved leg holding them up, that's a higher level of modification. The same goes for a side point. You have your own leg lift. Increase the amount of load that you have across the top. So, criteria for the second phase, level one of these, I'll read them all.
Okay.
But more or less, we're trying to put symmetry in motion, trying to make sure that they're getting good range of motion back, half level ahead, squat, but also with progressing that the balance of the higher score system, difficulty over the steps. The next phase is strength and jogging. This one we're really focusing on promoting strength of the involved side, making sure that they're improving their strength resistance through compound movements that they'll eventually progress into performing in the gym whenever they have a release. And then also focusing on making sure the single leg mechanics are good so that when we release into the last phase, which will be jogging, you know they have the strength and endurance to avoid any other issues coming up. So, I'm not going to read all that. That's a follow on issues that you guys have in the US. That's basically three of the major factors when it comes to ACL injuries, especially down the contact injuries, right? Four muscular balance, the knee, right? Mechanics, and the single leg stance, especially near, full knee extension, and then also proper landing mechanics, whenever you go to land and walk. So those are things that you want to think about to progressing through this. So key treatments in this area, this is basically strength conditioning. You want to increase intensity, you want to increase volume to the abdominal muscle groups that you're focusing on. Unilateral contact with the quad, supposed to be a change treatment. Compression of the quad, compression of the strengthening. That's the methodology we should be using. They can't go out and run and really break a sweat, but you don't get a hot weight up by doing this recession. You kind of tweak the movement, not letting them get into that 3-set to 10 on a standard 3 seconds. You rest for 3 seconds, we'll do another 3-set to 10. So I mean some periodization into it.
What you can do.
So you can really start to focus on building up that strength, not just the kind of muscular endurance.
Okay.
That's kind of what we talked about. Technique, right? It's up to us as coaches to make sure that they know what a proper technique looks like. That if they can't get into it because of either mobility or motor control, that we can teach them and prepare them for that. But also, that's where it really comes into play, when they don't replicate that over and over again. And so if they go, we show them how to do a proper reverse lunge. They can do it. We walk away, and they do it incorrectly for the next 30 minutes. We pretty much gain no benefit from it. So the quote was mentioned already. Practice doesn't make perfect practice. So that's kind of where our job comes in, to make sure that they're training the exercise correctly. Strength. Real quickly, we'll do the whole presentation on strength. But more or less, hitting three areas, the principles of muscle hypertrophy, getting the strength to build up. You're going to have to get close to the hand of tension, which is basically time under tension, getting them to pick up a heavier load, do that tension to the full range of motion, muscle breakdowns, the eccentrics, and also metabolic stress, so really getting that muscle pumping and muscle breakdown. Building your program so you're achieving all the principles, but also to get the strength adaptations to steadily progress, but also knowing the proper volume. If you just do 30 repetitions of the quad exercise, and hopefully that builds up the necessary strength to continue to improve, very good, I mentioned 5 seconds. So knowing your ideal is volume, and the NSCA recommends 60 to 90 reps per that muscle group. So if you're focusing on the quads and you're making more physical form, ideally 60 to 90 reps, but do it so that you're not doing it in the same fashion. Address the tension aspect, as I know it's a major higher step, a higher step, lower rep speed, and then work the right down into the early 2 sets of 12 metabolic stress. So, periodization, we need to talk about that. More or less, knowing what it is, how to implement it to your program, knowing when it's appropriate, when it's not appropriate. So,
okay, we'll be right back.
You're ready to shift in your size. Here we are into the,
the
most important part. Knowing how to make sure you're going to get those muscles to activate. But exercise and positions are going to get into the quads. We definitely want to make sure everyone has full range of motion. We don't want to just do 60 degree quad exercises, especially during this stage when the range of motion is cleared. We want to make sure that they're loading it properly. So if you don't have any sort of anterior tibia translation, right, if you stay back here, but the tibia stays vertical, we know that most likely the posterior chain is going to move. You need to see some anterior translation. So those mobility drills that we did prior to really helps to be able to move that mobility. And then the coaching comes in to make sure that they do a step up, squat or a lunge, and have it appropriately. And then lastly, making sure that they have the proper connection, they don't have a lot of bowel strength, they don't have a lot of coordination, hip rotation, that's the end of the issues. So here's some variations, we're not going to talk about all of them. I'm going to show you a couple that I've that you guys may not be aware of or just not do it, but I like to do it in my scenario. The first one is a goblet squat, a bilateral lift. It's the way I like to progress weight, so a bilateral heavy lift, without getting into the front squat and back squat techniques. Basically, put a landmine up. You guys are familiar with landmines. Basically, just a barbell attached to a little plate, or you can just put it into the corner of the table. And then you're focusing on bilateral squat mechanics. So, a goblet squat is good because you can slowly progress the resistance. But it emphasizes upright posture, like the torso is maintained like that position, like a front squat. And then you really emphasize coaching on getting that anterior tibia translation so you look far. This gentleman here on the video says to sit back a little bit more than I wanted. This is a little bit more impressive. So, gauging that, getting that to progress. And then you can go into unilateral exercises, different lunge variations. Here's some that we kind of go through. This first one here is a reverse landmine. Once again, we have the weight loaded to one side, so we have some core activation, anterior tibial translation. These are some variations we can do with it. We have a reverse lunge from a deficit. This guy is pretty high level. So more or less, you have a front-loaded resistance, so he's definitely having to keep his core and trunk upright. 12-inch step, so we've got a lot of hip mobility going through there. You want to make sure that you have a proper upright trunk position so that a lot of stress is applied as it goes through the knee flexion, but also the glutes are activated because of the stress. This is the side board. You can use bow slides as well. So this gentleman here is actually doing more of a posterior chamber, more glute activated reversal, because you don't see a lot of anterior tibial translation. So it's a way to kind of increase more glute activation. Next video. These are lateral variations.
Thank you.
Here's the lateral slide board. Really focuses on the weight over to the right side. You see he kind of wants to shift over to the left side, but more or less it's kind of a no stable, so it's almost a progression to a single leg down. Here's the landmine, joining up that right side, moving over and going back up, and back down a little bit of shoulder. This is a progressive lunge on the slide board, anyway, so what you want to see is make sure that right foot stays like it's not shifting in, just to move the weight, keeping that in mind with his shoulder. This is a progressive exercise. Think about guys who are going through the deceleration phase, having to go into a skip and land that sliding leg, right? If their force is unable to stay over that stance leg, they're going to have a lot of bias and left chest and so on. So it's a good way to progress to a more dynamic position. Right. Single leg variations. We got assisted, supported, and unsupported. Okay. One that I like to do is the rear foot elevates full squat, pull your squat. Great way to load up the quad and the primary lift, adding in weight. You can do it just in your lateral dumbbell on one side, so you're mostly like a stabilizing or an opposite leg. Here's an airborne lunge where you can kind of slowly take away their position, so you're getting them to the point where they're trying to get down to that full single leg squat. And it's a resistance, kind of counterbalance. And then eventually go to full range of motion as best you can. Posterior chain. Posterior chain is key, especially when it comes to athletics. We know the glutes are involved in all things athletic, especially when we're running, our glutes are the primary horizontal force when our foot's on the ground. So we need to know that. But when we're running, it's a horizontal propulsion that we need to make sure we key in on. We need to make sure we progress that strength so that whenever we're getting the guys back to sport that involves a lot of running, a lot of spreading, set acceleration, the glutes and the foot and the hamstring are the primary keys we need to address. Hamstrings in general, right, are most important muscles of the above the legs in the air. So actually slowing down that drive leg to get the foot in position to make contact. You can see in this picture here is a good example of when the hip goes through when we're running. When I want to key in on this, you can see that middle picture with the minus three. What it's showing is that the hip's actually going into the hyperextension. It's in the one with a lot of our actually loaded exercises. We go from hip flexion to hip extended position. No, we really can't get that hip hyperextension occur because we're even going through lumbar lordosis. But you can see when we're running, there's actually a hip hyperextension moment along with the hips in contact with the ground. The more you're going to need that strength in that position. So what we do is we want to make sure we're addressing that with our glute and hamstring exercises. So typically when we're going through those exercises, we want to get them to a fully extended position in the hip when we're standing, and we're actually loading, so things like squats, RDLs, those sorts of things, but then also focus on all areas of glute activation, which includes hip hyperextension, abduction, and extension. So here's a long list of exercises. I don't need to go over those. You have those in your notes. All right, these are some of the exercises we do for the glutes. Okay. It's a barbell hip thrust. This is my example of something that I like to do that goes through more of a hip extended, hyperextended position. Right, you take the weight off of the actual spine so you can get through that full hip hyperextension, get them to lock out fully. So you have a stress position where this is 245 for this gentleman. Right. You can get all the way up to 375 and have a pullback coming into that. But this is their way to really load up, get that muscle, mechanical tension aspect of that person into glute strengthening. You have a unilateral variation where you just basically go from a deficit down and all the way up. That's good. And then we have the last one at the bottom, which is a way to isolate stuff. The only good reason to use the Smith machine is to get an isolated quadruped kickback. You get that more of a glute isolate, so you kind of drop the resistance, get them to build up their stress, their burn. This is a long list of hamstring exercises. You guys can read them. Here's three exercises. Now, when we talk about the hamstrings, typically we want that eccentric strengthening. Right? So you're dealing with slowly eccentric, you know, loading the hamstrings, you're stretching them out, but you're keeping the hips elevated, and when you pull back up, you kick those hips back up in the air, so you've got that plate loaded on those hips. You have single leg RDL, and then you have the Nordic hamstring curl, which Nordic hamstring curl is about, it's got a lot of research that demonstrates how it's beneficial in reducing hamstring strains in soccer players. This is a good example of the Nordic hamstring curl, where there's a bilateral exercise, dropping down, slowly pull back up. That is a lat pull machine. Basically, just have him underneath the bolster, since I don't have a glute ham device. So don't forget glute hypertrophy and eccentric hamstring strength into your program. Don't just focus on quads and do like glute exercise. You can really get a lot more of that strength involved when you're dealing with runners to get their glutes to close to your chain every day. Last thing I want to throw is control movement. That's something that we kind of tend to focus on, kind of lose sight on when we're doing advanced strengthening exercises. There's a long list of the kind of the areas that we wanted to address with our core. You've got those notes. First video is a body saw. This is an anterior core exercise. You're trying to keep the spine from falling into a hyperextended position. If you think about like a back squat or any sort of back to a loaded exercise, you don't want those athletes to come in and then fall into a hip extended position, a little more extended position. You want them to be able to walk out the pelvis, control their pelvis when they're doing these exercises. This is a body crawl. It's kind of an advanced exercise. We're basically trying to keep them upright in that front position, but you're increasing the left arm as you get those arms to extend. And then there's the fall out. Then we have a lateral core exercise. Looks like videos like so. A suitcase lift. Basically, they drop down, pick up a heavy implement on one side, and you're trying to keep the torso from leaning toward that side, so the unevolved, the unweighted side is really having to activate to keep them from falling over. And then the next one would be the side front progressions. So the first exercise on there is a hip drop. So a concentric to eccentric hip abductor oblique exercise. All right, let's skip back this one. That's rotation. Anti-flexion is your typical big lift where you're trying to keep the lumbar spine from flexing, falling forward, so your bigger lifts, your deadlifts, good mornings, your RDL, and then even add in a bit down the road for them to kind of stabilize and start to fall into a lumbar flex position. So all that is very much core activated. The Turkish get up, if you guys are familiar with it, it's been shown to be an all-encompassing core activation exercise. So each position really kicks in the work of the core, controlling the motion and telling our patients to hold each position, so make each position an exercise in itself. So it's a controlled movement, core is activated. All right, handheld dynamometer, this is how we're using, how we're assessing their strength as they go through these strength phases. So getting into testing these positions lets us know how the quads are progressing, how their hamstrings are progressing, comparing the uninvolved and the involved, but also the hamstring quad ratio, which is been shown to be a particular injury, but the difference is too large. Alright, so these are, this is the Y balance, this is another assessment that we're going through. Love to talk about that, so we don't have to watch the whole video, but this is Y balance in action. So they're basically trying to maintain a single leg span for both of these, and to measure the difference to body. So that the distance that they're able to travel, the push those little sliders in a straight time. Also, the single leg endurance test, you guys probably saw this in the breakout, but you want to see that before they jog, that they have the quad strength and endurance to maintain a good position while they're going through it. So, once they pass all those tests, they get run into a jogging program. Right? This is the interval jogging program that they're going to go through. Those are all in your notes if you want to look at it. Alright, so the next phase is power agility. This is where we get into things like timing. We want to focus on adding in rotational things. We also want to make sure that they're doing exercises that are more like the sport specific moves that they do out on the field. So the set principle comes into play. We've also seen these pictures of bad mechanics, bad hips, right? So with loading, we want to make sure that they have good mechanics when they're doing their jumps, especially with the deceleration. You know, using proper lifts and proper technique. and we're going to see. And the LES, the LES is actually the test that we want to perform, right? So that we can see that we perform the biometrics, the sports metrics program, that they've learned something as they have come away with the mechanics of the jumps. So once we've completed that, we go through all our different gambling exercises to see if the contest is going to be different. This is the criteria to progress through the power agility, still range of motion, still true range of motion, but they have to be able to pass the single leg contest and LES to complete the sports motion program. Finally, the sports specific, this is what we described, rotational movements, make them doing agility drills, you know, drilling drills, or predictable things, and then eventually get them going on unpredictable where you're trying to tell them where to come, they don't know where they're supposed to go, but we're looking for mechanics. Can they do it without falling? Can they do it without increase in pain or something? Right. So completing the sports metrics is important. We have these drills in particular that they don't talk about, so the cops. So more or less, what we're trying to do is not necessarily just trying to change the world, but we want to make that wheel spin faster. However, we can improve. You know. So that's all I got.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're broadcasting live at the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update. We're trying to do more this year, so there's some technical issues as some of the recordings weren't going exactly as planned. Just didn't click the right button, but that happens when you're trying to be in two places at one time. But there's lots of great content. Possibly a better way to view all these, to get all this, is to view the YouTube on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. It has the links to the YouTube pages. So that's a better way to check that out, because the audio is pretty consistent throughout that. And then also you can see the video there. But definitely check those out. The information about the show notes, the slide notes, presentation notes, those are in there as well on the podcast information. So hopefully you get to learn a little bit. You get to learn a little bit from all this. If you know Bob Marley, thank him. If you don't, I can tell you how to get to know him. Great guy. He's the one that allows us to do all this. So I want to continue to thank Bob Marley. And also our promo code for starting in August, we're going to start releasing the promo code or the sweepstakes entry code for school health, for our partnership with school health. We're releasing that here in just a minute, so be ready to write that down. That way you have that. All right, so like I said, I'm going to have that promo code here. You guys ready? Since it is July right now when I'm recording these, and we just celebrated my son's birthday, the promo code for the first set of sweepstakes will be Samuel. Samuel, so that's his name, that's going to be the promo code. The promo code for the second month, which will be September. So August will be Samuel. September will be Jonah, J-O-N-A-H. And that's the name of my firstborn son, and his birthday is also in July. So since I'm recording these, I'm going to go ahead and use their names as the promo code. So Samuel is the one for August, and then for September, we're going to use Jonah. So when you fill out those forms on school health for the sports medicine broadcast, then you'll want to use those codes.